Now, as I've told most of you guys before working as a chaplain, I used to work as a concierge at a hotel. Now, what a concierge does, most people might know, but they park the cars, they take the bags up, but most of all, you try and book things for guests. So a guest would come up and say, hey, I would like tickets to see the theatre, and you would try and get it for them. Or, hey, I haven't been out for dinner in ages, I want a good Indian restaurant. You say, hey, I know this place, how about going here? So it was a good job. Oh, it was good. I get to a tour guide in Melbourne, and Melbourne's a wonderful city, and I love it very, very much, and it's great. So it was good. But it did have its bad days, obviously, like any job does. Now, there was one day when I was in charge of my department, the chief concierge had gone away, it was a day off, and it was getting around this time of year. So it was just before the Australian Open started. And so the chief concierge wanted to work through the Australian Open, so he wanted a few days off. So I was left in charge of a couple of other people, and it was good. I was putting my hat on and saying, porters, take bags up here and do this and do that, and hey, you've got the power now, it's all good. But there was one particular time in particular where the hotel boss, the boss of the hotel, came up to me and said, hey, look, we've got a big VIP guest coming in. He's a journalist from one of the French TV shows, television stations, and we want to impress him because, you know, if we give him a good thing, then when the Australian Open is on, the rest of his crew is going to stay with us. So we want to make a good impression. I said, yeah, I've dealt with a couple of these people before. How bad can it be? And so he checked in the afternoon and about 3 or 4, and it seemed like a pretty nice guy. And I said, welcome. I said, during your stay, if there's anything you need, I'm your person on today, and I'll give you the names of the concierge on during the week, and so you'll be able to talk to them. And the chief concierge will be back tomorrow, and Steve will introduce himself then. And so that was fine. He was a nice guy. I took his bags up to the room personally, and he gave a nice little tip as well, which always helped. And so that was good. 20 minutes later was when all the trouble started. He came back down with a list of things he wanted to do. And they weren't just an ordinary things. The first thing, he came down with a bag of laundry and a colour chart on his laundry bag. And so he wanted all his clothes individually washed and stacked and folded in colour order. And so he had a little colour order, colour chart on his laundry bag. So this wasn't obviously the first time he had done this. He'd gone around to other hotels and when he was staying, this is what he normally do. It's okay, I didn't have to deal with it. I just have to handball it off to the laundry and say, hey, it's your job. It's okay. Next thing he wanted was a ham, cheese, tomato sandwich, which sounds okay, and chips on the side, which sounds okay, but the ham had to be organic, the cheese had to be Gruyere cheese, and tomato had to be seedless and no skin. And so he, again, like, I'm not too sure why, I'm not too sure if it was a dietary thing, or he just didn't like skin, or had something against seeds, I'm not too sure, but that's okay, I didn't have to worry about it. The kitchen staff would have to worry about it, and they'd have to peel the potatoes and take the seeds out, I'd give it to them. But a couple of other things he wanted as well. And so he also wanted to, because it was leading up to the Australian Open and he was a tennis fan as well, he wanted to have a hit of tennis onto the Melbourne Park. Now, usually you can do that. Usually you can book a court on at the Australian Open, Melbourne Park. And usually you can go on like Margaret Court and things like that. You can usually book it out and it's pretty good. You can't do Rod Laver Arena, but you can book some of the other ones. But obviously leading up to the Australian Open, it's chaos, because they do the qualifying and they do everything else. But he was determined he wanted one. And he said, like, tomorrow I want to book a tennis court here and I want a massage afterwards and I want to go there out to dinner at Beautemond or Movida or another restaurant afterwards. I said, oh, I'll see what I can do. So he went back up there. And the problem with those restaurants in particular, especially during the time the Australian Open, you have to get a booking about 2 or 3 weeks beforehand. These are probably some of the best reputation restaurants in Melbourne, and he wanted a booking like that. Now, sometimes we can pull this thing off, because as I said, being at a hotel, you can say, hey, look, we got George Clooney staying with us. Can he stay? Can you do that? And they go, yeah, it's okay. But if some French journalist, who not many people know, say, hey, can you do that? They go, yeah, who's that person? Maybe next week. And so I had to go up and tell him that, hey, we can't get you into the restaurants, we can't get you into a tennis court, but I've booked you one locally, and some of the other professionals hit up at that one, so you might be able to rub shoulders with some of the other professionals while they're warming up, but that wasn't good enough for him. And to make matters worse, I took him up his sandwich, and it had no seeds in it, had no skin on the tomato, but it was burnt. And I didn't think it was burnt. It was fine. I could have eaten it. I thought, actually, I did eat it, actually. Because he sends it back. And I said, well, I told the kids and stuff, what are you going to do? Throw it out? I said, no, I'll eat it. It's good. So I put it back. And he said, no, I want to hit up in the Melbourne Park. I want you to do it for me. I want this sort of stuff there. I said, well, look, you know, I've done the best I can. I can try doing it again. And I'll see what happens. But I can't promise anything. And he said, no, okay. He said, well, okay. So I walk back down to my office, but instead of complaining to me again, he complains to the big hotel boss. And so 2 minutes later, I get down to my desk thinking, okay, who am I going to call now? Which restaurant am I going to go to say, this one's just as good as this one? And I get a message from my hotel boss, come to my office straight away. So, okay, I'll just disappear for 2 minutes and see where... No, I didn't do that. But I went to his office, and he said, well, look, you know, you have to do it for this guest. You know, it could mean lots of dollars for the rest of the hotel. We could get lots of other clients. You have to do it. I know it's a... And I said, well, it's impossible. You can't do it. I'm trying to book a court at Melbourne Park at this time of year, you can't do it. He goes, no, keep on trying. And I said, well, I'm going to call up the chief concierge and see what he can do, because obviously he's got more contacts than I have. And so I thought, oh, no. I thought my day had gone from going good, because I got a big tip to begin with, just going really bad afterwards. I was feeling down, and not only that, I thought everyone was having a go at me, because not only did he return the chips and sandwich the first time, but he returned it a second time as well, because again, it was too raw, it wasn't cooked enough. I don't know who ate it the second time, but not me. But it was too raw again. So obviously the kitchen was now getting angry at me, because I was the one who had to tell them that. And the laundry, well, they hadn't had a request like this before, and so they were getting upset with me. And the hotel boss was getting upset with me. I thought, well, I can just hide under my little desk for the next 2 hours and forget about life, and I'll just curl up and twiddle my thumbs and listen to something. But I couldn't do it. And so I thought, my day was just getting worse. And it came to almost the end of my shift, and with half an hour to go, I thought, you beauty, it's going to be someone else's responsibility. I've already told the hotel boss that I can't do it anymore, and I've already told the hotel boss who the next concierge on duty will be, and I've already told the person, the guest, who the next person they'll be in contact with. And so with 30 minutes on my shift to go, I have a phone call, and it's the chief concierge. And I thought, oh no, here we go. I'm going to get in trouble because I haven't done the right thing by the guest. You know, the big hotel boss is calling him up. And so I'm reluctant to answer the phone call. But I answer because it's my job and I have to do it. And so I answer, and he says, well, look, you know, I've heard about the day you've had. I know you've had a pretty bad day, and I know you've done all you can, and I've called on my contacts, and I can't even do anything. So this guy, the hotel boss, is going to have to deal with him, and it's not your problem anymore. And to make matters better, he said, well, a restaurant has just called me up, and it's just opened up in town, and it's inviting me out to try out its new menu so you can recommend it to the guests. And he says, it's for two, and my wife can't do anything tonight, but would you like to come with me? I thought, ah. Oh, yes. I've already had a tasted ham and cheese and chip sandwich, but I can do with anything else you put in front of me. So he said, yeah, would you like to come out with me? I said, yes, that'd be great. I said, well, he gave me the details and that was good. And I'm able to meet up with him. And I had a great afternoon. So the rest of the day, the bad day that I'd been having, was put aside because of these little actions of one person. The stuff that I was thinking about beforehand, the stuff that I was going through, was put aside because of the actions of one person. And which leads me to the story that we open up, we're going to look at today. And I want Ben to come up here and read it to us, and I'm going to have it on here. It's in the book of Mark, chapter 2, verses 13 to 17.
All right, so I'm reading from the NIV. I'm not sure if we've got it up there as well, but hopefully it's the same. So, once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him and began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said to them, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners."
All right, so what has happened the first couple of chapters of Mark? I just want to fill you in because we're jumping into chapter 2 here and we want to get back, just touch on what's been going on. So Mark doesn't start off with the story of Jesus' birth. He jumps straight into when he's baptized, as we saw in that video to begin with. And he goes around, calls a few disciples, heals a few people, then he goes off to pray by himself and he heals a few more people and then he comes to where we're at now. And so he's involved in a preaching tour of Galilee. He's going around talking to people and calling people and healing people, and he's doing this little tour and he's going around there. And so he's involved in different people's lives. So he's already called the first couple of disciples. Four fishermen have come and he said, yeah, I'll follow you, I'll do whatever you want. And he's now near the port of Capernaum and he calls Matthew Levi. He calls a publican a tax collector. Usually one of these people these days, I mean, you probably know much about tax collectors, but they weren't very much liked back in the day. Now, society loves to put people into classes, and so back in the day, they would have been like the lowest possible classes. They were usually Jewish people that made their living by charging an extra amount. So say your taxes were 10%, I could charge you 11% and have that 1% back to myself. Or I could charge you 20% and have that 10% back to myself. So that's how they would used to make their money, and that's how they would used to make extra money, is they would used to charge that. So even if you were the kindest, good tax collector, you would still get a bad reputation because everyone would think you were making your money off them. And so no matter what you could do, people often despised you. And so there were some really rich tax collectors out there. And obviously the richer you were, the more despised you were. Now, some had their offices in different places and some had them roaming around at different places as well. And so we're at a lake now. We're at a port of lake. So Levi would have set up near a lake. Now, it's not determined what type of tax collector he was, whether he was getting people from inside, going importing and exporting from the lake, or whether the other side of tax collecting, where normal people were going. But you can imagine at a lake, in those sort of days, lots of stuff would have been happening. You know, people at markets would have been happening. People all around there would have been doing stuff. And so here Levi is, setting up his little booth and tax collecting, and now he's trying to get his own money. Now, he might have known that Jesus was coming that day. He might have known, hey, this is you beauty. I'm going to get lots of money this day. There's going to be lots of people following Jesus. There might be more trade coming in, so I'm going to set up my booth. I'm going to make money. He might have known that Jesus was coming and said, hey, look, you know, I can kill two birds with one stone. I can make money, but also listen to this wonderful preacher that I've heard about. But his primary purpose for that day was to make money. And you can imagine what his life would have been like. People looking down on him, shutting him away, not having too many friends, and the friends he would have been his fellow tax collectors, and we get onto that later, but his fellow tax collectors, other people mentioned in there like prostitutes and things like that. So not the most well-to-do people. And so here is a man who's probably get ticked off by lots of people, annoyed by lots of people, shunned down by society, and having a pretty bad day probably at the same time. And so I'd like to walk through that little passage we had before where it says Jesus is walking along and people are following him. And I can imagine that I don't think they're following him one by one just in a big trail. I mean, they're crowding around him, they're walking around him, they're pushing each other aside, trying to get closer to Jesus. Jesus has got his disciples here. Now, I'm not too sure if they were big, muscly bodyguard, fisherman type people, I don't know, who were just trying to push the crowd away. But his disciples are following him as well. And he looks over and he sees Levi tax collecting. And whether it's really close or even it's a fair distance away, he says, Levi, come follow me. Come follow me. And so Levi says he immediately stopped what he was doing and followed him. So whether he had to pack up his stuff, whether he had to take the money, put it in his pocket, whether he had to do whatever, he would have to walk his way through the crowd and push his way through whoever was there. And you can imagine what the people would have been saying to him. Why him? Why this piece of trash? Why this little scum of the earth? Why is Jesus following him? Why is Jesus calling him? Why not me? Why didn't he say, hey, Chris, come follow me? I'm just here. I'm next to him. I'm pushing through anyway. Chris, come and follow me. No, he calls the tax collector. There's Levi, come follow me. And it's an interesting point to think about now. That his disciples that he's been called beforehand are like four fishermen and a tax collector. Now, if I was going to come over, I'm the next king of the earth, and I'm going to pick my bunch of disciples, I'm not going to pick two, four lowly people like that. I'm going to pick some cool people. I'm going to pick some really awesome, I don't know, I'm going to pick a bodyguard. I'm going to pick, you know, Sylvester Stallone, someone who can, you know, and then one tax collector, so at least I'll look better than that person there, and the other four are better. But I'm not going to pick lowly people. I'm going to pick people that, you know. But Jesus picks these people. Jesus picks the fishermen, the common blue-collar people, the people, everyday people. And now he's picking up people even less than that. Even the lowest common denominator. Say, hey, look, you know, I know you people don't look upon them very well, but hey, I want them to follow me. And so I imagine him coming over to him. I imagine Levi pushing his way through and coming up to Jesus, or that, and then Jesus putting his arm around him saying, hey, welcome. You're here, mate. You now sit up there. Because the next scene, it's at Levi's place for dinner. So it's either like Jesus saying, hey, I want to come to your place for dinner, or Levi saying, hey, what are you doing tonight? I don't know all these people are doing nothing, but you and me coming to dinner in my place or something like that. But I can imagine one of those two things happening. That he, you know, one inviting the other and a close embrace and say, hey, you're coming over to my place for dinner. Now, I'm not too sure what Levi's wife would have been said or the people living with him would have said, but, you know, having to feed all those people would have been pretty weird. But we jump to the next scene. We jump to the next part of it. And so I wanted to show what our house might have looked like back then. If it is here. Okay. So these are two possible houses of what they would have been like. But the main thing is you can see a big like courtyard in the middle of the one on the right there, or even on the one on the left, you see when you're opening up the bit of a courtyard. So they used to have like a courtyard like that. So when lots of people came, they wouldn't come to the dining room. They wouldn't have like a dining room in ours or a lounge, or you make your way through and there's a bedroom on the right or anything like that. They had a big courtyard where lots of people would come. And sometimes they would have a big window where people could look out as well to it. And so you can imagine Jesus and his throngs of people coming along, saying, hey, and starting to fill those areas up. It's not like our places. They don't have security doors. They don't have big fences around their places. It's usually pretty open. And as I said, with windows, not glass or not frosted glass or anything like that, you can usually peek in and see what was happening. That's what used to happen in those days, you know. It was like that. You could walk in and you could look at what's going on. And so here we find out that Levi has invited Jesus over for dinner. So it says all sorts of people are hanging there. All sorts of people are having dinner with him. All sorts of tax collectors, prostitutes, all sorts of things. Now, we're not too sure if Levi knew all of them. And it's fair to say he probably didn't, because the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were down there as well. And so they were following as well. So Levi wouldn't have known all of them. But he would have known a few. And enough that people are having a good time. Jesus is having a good time. Levi's having a good time. I don't know what they're eating, but they're all having a good time. And so the next part of it says, the Pharisees and the lawgivers are talking to them. They said they're mumbling, they're talking behind their backs. They're saying, what's Jesus doing hanging out with these riffraff? What's Jesus hanging out with these people? Why on earth is he hanging out with them? Again, he should be hanging out with us. We should go back to the temple, hang out there rather than hang out with these people here. But this is his answer. He said, it's not the healthy that need a doctor, but the sick. I've not come to call the righteousness, but to the sinners. He gives the Pharisees a serve. He gives them a bit of a backhanded compliment, backhanded statement, rather. See, he's not defining these two groups. He's not defining, hey, there's a good people and there's a bad people over here, which it looks like to begin with. But he's giving them their own language. Because throughout the gospel, throughout Jesus' message, throughout Mark, we all know, we come to learn that there are no good people in there. That we were all bad people. We're all sinners. We all fall short of what we're supposed to be like. And so he's telling that to the Pharisees. He's saying, hey, you know, I've not come to call the righteous. I've come to call everyone. I've come to call the sinners. I've come to call them. That's why I'm hanging out with these people first, because these people welcome me. These people get it a little bit. And so it's a backhanded statement to hang out with everyone, that I'm going to hang out with everyone. And so what a sort of message to start the series off, to launch into the series on Mark. Now, I have to admit something to you guys. Now, I take off about 3 years, 3 weeks holidays, 3 years, ooh, that'll be good. I take about 3 weeks holidays, meant about the Christmas time at the start of the year. And before the end of the year, Matt Carson's been helping me out with some, trying to get the nut together what we're going to be talking about for this term. And before Christmas, he said, oh, we were talking one time, I can't remember, probably Matt, because he's super intelligent that way, says, we should talk about Mark. We should go through that. I said, yeah, it's a great idea. I'm going to go away on holidays. I'll think about it some more. You can think about it some more as well. And like anyone on their holidays, they like to get away from work. And I like to not get away from this place altogether. I mean, I still listen to sermons and I still listen to other things. I still read books and stuff like that. But try not to think about here as much as possible. 2 weeks into my holidays, I get a message from Matt saying, hey, have you looked at, I've got this great 9 week proposal here about the sermon. I said, yeah, it looks good. I'll have a look at it soon. And I tell you, we'll look at it soon. It'll be great. And a week later, I guess, have you looked at it yet? It's like this on Facebook. It's not really him in my ear saying, hey, have you looked at it? Have you looked at it yet? And I said, well, yeah, no, I haven't looked at it yet. I will look at it soon. And then a week later, I thought, I actually should look at it now and take a bit of a look at it. And so I looked at it. I thought, wow, what a great way to start a series. What a great way to start the book, because this is one of the cornerstones of Christianity, the message that Jesus comes for everyone, that Jesus comes not just for like the people in church, not just for the preachers, not just for the good people, so to speak. Jesus comes for everyone. Jesus comes for everyone, for the people, the lower society, who we might consider the lower society in today, like the homeless or the refugees. Jesus comes for them. Jesus comes for us when we're feeling bad. Jesus comes for everyone. And see, the truth of the matter is, we are all sinners. There's no class when it comes to Jesus. We are all on the other side of the coin. Jesus comes for us as tax collectors. Jesus comes for us as who we are right now. See, we always feel bad. Some of us get stuck in those little ruts all the time when we do feel bad, when we put ourselves down, and we're made to feel like the last common denominator, when we're made to feel like we're tax collectors. We do it ourselves. Hey, I'm not good enough for this. I compare myself to other people. Sometimes other people put that burden on us as well. And so we put ourselves down and we are always, falling short of what we think we are. Yet Jesus looks past us and says, hey, look, I've come for you. I'm for you. I'm with you. See, Mark shows the importance of this by highlighting this at the start of the gospel, by calling the four fishermen, by calling a tax collector and saying, hey, I am just come for the righteous. I'm just come for the people that think they're good enough for me. I've come for everyone. I've come that you can do that. No exclusions, no matter what sort of life we've led beforehand, Jesus comes for us. We are accepted and loved by Jesus no matter what we do. And not only that, not only are we accepted, not only does he say, come follow me, he says, I'm going to have dinner at your place tonight. We're going to hang out. We're going to play board games and have an apartment somewhere. We're going to spend time together. He doesn't just say, hey, you're welcome, follow me, but that's it. I'm not going to talk to you ever again. He's saying, no, I want to hang out with you. I want to spend time with you. I want to get to know you better. So regardless of what we feel of ourselves or what other people put to us, God loves us. God wants to hang out with us. God speaks to us. Because as I said before, we've all had times in our lives when we put ourselves down and we feel worthless. And we don't even feel worthy to be in God's presence. But God's saying the opposite. You are worthy. I want to hang out with you. I want to spend time with you and get to know you more. And so this is at the start. What a way to start a 9 week series with this common message that we've heard many times before, but we need to hear again every now and again. And this is a framework to which Jesus works within. To say, hey, look, I'm for everyone. I'm not just for this person. I'm not just for that person. I'm for everyone. Regardless of what we've done, God loves us. And so the other side of the coin is how do you see yourselves as well? As Christians, as people who believe in Jesus, we want to be like Jesus. But sometimes in our lives, we are more like the Pharisees. We can be like the other people and say, hey, what are these guys doing in our church? What are these guys doing hanging out with these people over here? Why are they there? We just want to be our own little group here. But Jesus is not saying that. Jesus is saying, hey, look, as a church, as a faith, we're open to anyone. Anyone's welcome. So we have to ask ourselves a question. If we are okay with ourselves at the moment and think, okay, now I'm in a place where I know God loves me and I feel comfortable, that's fine. But we need to work. We go further than that. We need to think, okay, how do I look at my life? Am I being the best example of Jesus to other people? Am I accepting other people like Jesus accepts them? Am I inviting people over? Am I inviting people to spend time with them? That can be pretty hard to ask sometimes. And as I said at the start, if you're in a position where you need to feel God's love at the moment, just stick with that. Stick with that and just say, hey, now you accept it. But as I said, if you're not like that and you're in a place, hey, where I am happy, then think about what you do to yourself and think about how you act towards others as Jesus was. Because the best advertisement, we are supposed to act like Jesus. We're supposed to be Jesus to another. And now there's a cry out there to say, okay, the people not accepted, the lost people, the people that don't feel welcome within our own communities, and we've got a thing to do about that. And so I wanted that challenge for us as well to think as we walk into this, as we walk into Mark and say, okay, how can we be more like Jesus? How can we do that? How can we accept other people and go from that? So I want to leave with those two points as we open up this book of Mark, and let's close in prayer. Hey God, we just want to thank you. Firstly, it's for your love and grace and kindness that you sent your son to die for us, our Lord. And Lord, sometimes we feel low. Maybe other people have told us that, or we have made ourselves feel like that. Sometimes we feel like those tax collectors that no one liked. When we do feel like that, or if you're feeling like that at the moment, remind us of your love for us. Remind us that you care for us. And not only do you ask us to follow you, but you hang out with us and want that relationship with us. That's the first point, that we need to be with you. And it's a cornerstone of what you believe with us as well, that we need to spend that time with you, and that you love us and care for us no matter what we've done or no matter what we do. But also let us look at our own lives to think where we can be like you. And if we have struggled in the past or we have been a bit more like the Pharisees to say, why do we accept that person? Or maybe we've being happy with them at a distance but haven't involved them in anything. Let us look at our own lives and see where we can improve. And we just pray these things in your name. Amen.